And we're holding on page Tess Zion in Yoma, about five lines from the end of a long paragraph over there, so towards the end of Oyslamidalid. We were talking about yesterday various groups or individuals in the Beis Mikdash where the Chacham criticized them. We learned about Beis HaTinas and so a few lines from the bottom, about seven lines from the bottom, Ben Kamtzer Leretze. So we learned about, we talked about Beis Galmu, who made the Lachem upon him and they wouldn't give away their secrets, and Beis Avtinas, who made the Keteres and wouldn't give away their secrets, and how the Chachamim suspected them that they're doing it for their own good. And at least in the case of Beis Avtinas, it turns out they actually had the right motives in mind. So the Gemara continues. Ben Kamtzer leRotzem l'Lamad. We said in the Mishnah that Ben Kamtzer didn't want to teach people about the writing, about the special method of writing that he had. What was it? Amrul. So he would take four pens and hold them between his five fingers. Such that if he has to write a word of four letters, in particular the name Yudke Vavke, then he would be able to write it. So it's a cupboard for Hashem's name. That way Hashem's name doesn't have to be incomplete. That way also you're not allowed to talk while you're writing Hashem's name. So this minimizes the possibility of doing that. So again, the Chacham asked him, why don't you want to teach it to others? Everybody else, of all the people we mentioned in the Mishnah, Beis HaTinas and Beis Galmu, and even Hugras ben Levi, which is the next one that we're going to say, Motzu Tshuva L'divrei, they were all able to find an answer. Beis HaTinas and Beis Galmu, we said they were concerned that the secrets might fall into the hands of Goyim, and they were going to use them for Avodah Zarah. Hugras ben Levi, which is the next one, which is the one in the next piece of the Gemara over here, Tosfos Yeshanim brings that he also, the Yerushalmi says, that he also gave the same reason that the beautiful method of singing that he uses, he's afraid may end up being used for Avodah Zarah. Ben Kamtzer lo motza tshuva l'dvarav, whereas Ben Kamtzer could not find any good reason. Now, why not? Why can't he say the same thing, that they might use it for Avodah Zarah? So a number of the Mefarshim point out that in each in their own way, there's no reason that anybody would use this for Avodah Zarah. They don't have the concept of writing the names of their idols in Kedusha, such that you shouldn't interrupt in the middle of it, or such that it wouldn't be bekavadik for the name to be incomplete or whatever. So therefore, it's not like they'd end up using it for that. The Meiri, in fact, says a fascinating psychological thing in this connection. He says when you look at the Goyish ceremonies for their Avodah Zarahs, they always have, it's always something, it's in public, it's always something to excite the admiration of people. The idea of doing things in secret, that there are things that are done, that a person is alone and he does them in honor of his getchka, they really have no such concept. So this kind of thing, it's not like anybody would know what he's doing in terms of the writing that he's doing, that he's writing the word all as one rather than writing it letter by letter. So therefore, they wouldn't care about it. They wouldn't consider it to be anything significant because it's not like something that they could show off to the crowd.
They do these public displays to incite their own Yetzirah.
Well, to incite their own Yetzirah, but also in order to wow people with the ceremony and the pomp and everything. Yeah. Yeah. Okay, but yeah. Anyway. Rabbi Yaakov Emden points out another point in it as well. When you think about it, the other three, their things all have to do with the Beis Mikdash. So they can all say, we were concerned that Beis Mikdash is going to be destroyed, and then these things will be used by the Goyim for their getchkes. What Ben Kamtzer is doing is writing, as far as writing Hashem's name all at once, has nothing to do with the Beis Mikdash. So what's his excuse? Even when there's no Beis Mikdash, we Jews are still going to need it. Mela, the other three could say, at least once it's not needed by us Jews, then the Goyim might take it over, but he had no such excuse. So, Alarish. No, that was Ben Kamtzer with an aleph. This is Ben Kamtzer with a resh. Al rishonim omnim zecha tzaddik livracha. So on the first few in the Mishnah, or it says zecha tzaddik livracha, because even the ones that we said before that the Chacham criticized, after all, they did have their good aspects as well. Va'al ben kamtzer v'chaverov nema v'shem rishonim yukov. Regarding Ben Kamtzer and others like him, the pasuk continues: the name of the rishonim will rot. Now, my v'shem rishonim yukov. What does that phrase mean? Meaning, in other words, if it's meant to be the opposite of, first of all, why the shame? Just say Zeichot Tzadik Livracha or Rishoyim Yirkav, which would mean the remembrance of the Rishoyim. You often have the kind of thing Evan Ezra and other Mephoshim sometimes talk about in Pesukim. You often have something called Moshech Atzmoy V'Acher Imoy. Sometimes you'll have a word that's said in one half of a pasuk or in one part of a pasuk, and it's meant to be applied to other words in the same pasuk as well. You'll have, let's say, a pasuk that begins with the word Loi, let's say, or that has the word Loi someplace in it, and then continues later on with another verb or something, and Loi is meant to apply to both of them. So the same way over here, it could have said Zecher Tzadik Livracha or Rishoyim Yirkav, and we would understand that it means the memory of the Rishoyim. Why use the word shame? And also, Yirkav is not really the opposite of Livracha. It should have said Shame Rishoyim Yikulal or something like that. So Amar Rav Elazar, Rak Buvis Talabish Meisehim. It means there should be a moldiness. So Rashi actually, rakbubis usually means like spoiling or rotting. Rashi translates it as rusting. So their names should become rusty. Bishmei sehem, and their names, Maihi Amar Ravina Dolei Maskin and Bishmaihu. We don't call people by the names of Rishoyim, and that way, like their names, as it become like rusty from disuse. Tosfos over here points out an interesting point, which is. Now, we do have on the face of it several counterexamples. First of all, Tosfos Yeshanim points out, well, the Ritva actually points out over here that he's quoting from Tosfos, meaning from Tosfos Yeshanim. What about the fact that we use it? What about you find in later generations the name Yishmael was used? You have, of course, the Tana. You have a couple of Tanoim named Rabbi Yishmael in later generations. Also, it was used by Jews nowadays. You don't really, but it was. So first, and he was a Rasha. So first of all, you have the Gemara tells us in Baba Basra an opinion that he did Tshuva. Second of all, his name was given by Hashem, where Hashem tells Hagar, you will call his name Yishmael. So therefore, that's different. Tosfos, meanwhile, regular Tosfos printed on the side printed in its usual place. And the Gemara points out, we seem to have a few other counterexamples. You have, there's a place in the Gemara where it mentions someone named Chonan ben Avshalom, and Avshalom was a Rasha. So Tosfos says, no, it's not Avshalom, but rather Avishalom, which you do find the name like that in Tanakh, and that's not known to be a Rasha. So therefore, no problem using that name. Agav, you know, you have in Israel nowadays, they do use a lot of these names of Rishoyim as common names. It's even, you know, we all know there are Israelis out there whose name is Nimrod. They tell, by the way, about such a person, such a person whose name was Nimrod and eventually became a Baal Teshuva. And he wrote, I think, to the Rebbe to ask if he should change his name. And the Rebbe said, Adrabba, when secular Israelis see that there's a Nimrod who's a Frum Yid, then it'll make them realize, you know what, just because we grew up this way doesn't mean we have to stay this way. But anyway, you do have, for example, there was a well-known radio personality in Israel named Avshalom, and there's other examples. But anyway, Tosfos then goes on to talk about another one. You have a character mentioned in Malachim and in Yeshaya by the name of Shevna. And based on the Gemara in Sanhedrin, it comes out he was a Rosha, yet we find that Hillel had a brother of that name. So Tosfos says, again, first of all, one possibility is the name of Hillel's brother is not Shevna with a vase, but rather Shachna with a chaf. And in that case, there's no problem. Second of all, Tosfos says it may be that there were actually two Shevnas. Tosfos analyzes the Pesukim in some detail and says it may be that there were two Shevnas, one who was a Rosha and one who was not, and therefore there's no problem using the name. Another interesting example of this, by the way, is the name Menachem. You only have one Menachem in all of Tanakh, and he was a Rosha. He was one of the later kings of Yisrael. However, we do find in Midrashim that Menachem is, first of all, we find it's a name of Mashiach, but besides that, also, we find that it was like the secret name of Noach. Noach for public consumption was called Noach, but in private, it was Shelach and then the rest of his family called him Menachem, Zeh Yenachamenu, Meloshin Menachem, so therefore, then it's a kosher name to use. Yeah.
Was Avshalom the one who got hung by his hair?
He was the one who got hanged by his hair. Yeah, he had rebelled against David and he had violated his father's prerogative. Yeah. Okay. So the Gemara says, Hugras ben Levi Chula. Now, we said in the Mishnah that Hugras ben Levi knew a special method of singing, and he also didn't want to tell anybody. So, Tanya, what was a special method? We learn in a Braisa. When he was putting forth his voice in song, when he was one of the Levim in the Bais Mikdash, who was singing, Machnes Gudloy L'Seich Piv, he would put his thumb into his mouth, and he would put his fingers between the Nimin. Now, Nimin, Rashi explains, it means between the hairs of his mustache. So maybe like the idea is he's using them almost as like a harmonica. in order to make his voice sound better. The Me'iri, on the other hand, understands that Nimin means the strings of the harp that he was playing. So he would accompany his singing with playing on the harp. Anyway, Ad Shehoyu was so beautiful. Ad Shehoyu Echav HaKoinim Nizkorim B'Vas Roish La'Acharehem. His fellow Koinim were taken aback by leaning backwards from the force and the power of his voice. Rashi says Nirtoy in Machro Eskol. It's like they were almost like afraid of the way that he's using his voice for the melody. Marsha says also Nizkorim Bavas Roish can mean, you know how you see when people sing, when they want to raise their voice in song, they throw their head back and sing like that. So they like they want to accompany him also in singing loudly and beautifully like that. So they would throw their heads backwards, Bavas Roish Lacharehem, and join him in the singing. Anyway, the point is, he didn't tell his actual method to them. But again, Tosfos Hashanim says he also used the same reason as Beis Gamu and Beis Avtinas, that when the Beis Hamikdash is destroyed, then I don't want this secret to fall into the hands of the Goyim, and they're going to use it for their Genshkin.
Does that really do something? If you want to sing loud, you get more power. You give your voice out from your lungs.
There's different ways, but I guess one way is you often see when people are singing with power, with koyach, or with heart, then they throw their head back. Okay. Anyway, the Gemara says, Masiv Ravin. So Ravina says, so you're telling me you're not allowed to name after Rishoyim. But what about, we have a Braisa that says, Maisa b'Doyeg ben Yosef. It happened with a boy by the name of Doyeg ben Yosef. Shehinichay over ben Cotton. His father left him. His father passed away and left him as a young boy. But the family was very rich. Every day his mother would measure little doyeg with tfachim to see how much he's grown from day to day. And she would give his weight in gold. Rashi says the extra weight in gold to the Beis Hamikdash. So in other words, she would estimate based on his increase in height. She'd estimate how much weight he had gained and give that amount in gold to the Beis Hamikdash. From day to day, yeah.
Really a big difference.
I don't know if there's a difference from day to day. Maybe sometimes. Okay. Yeah, maybe. I don't know. It says over here, B'chol Yom. Yeah. Anyway, Kivin Shagover Oyev, when the enemies overpowered the Jews and conquered Yerushalayim, but besieged Yerushalayim, and there was a famine going on in the city, and there was no food to eat, Tavachta V'achalta, she shechted this child and ate him in desperation. V'aleha koinin Yirmiyah, and that's what Yirmiyah means, when he says on her, when he mourns on her in Eicha, Im Techalna Noshim Piriam Olei Tipuchim, how could it be that things that Hashem, that you made things get so bad that women eating their own fruit, their own children. The children, Olay, means babies, tipuchim. So the simple meaning of tipuchim means the ones that they raised. But here we're doushing tipuchim, maloshin tvachim. Here she was measuring him day by day to see how much he grew in tvachim, and now instead she ended up eating him. And Mishivati Ruach HaKodesh, and the Ruach HaKodesh answered back, the Omer Eloi, and answered back, you want to know why? Look at the continuation of the Pasuk. Im Yehorig B'Mikdash Hashem, Kohen Menavi. How could it be that there was killed in the Beis Hamikdash a Kohen and a Navi, as we know, Zechariah Ben Yehoyada was killed in the Beis Hamikdash, and even then, at the time of the Churban, 200 odd years later, the blood was still boiling and bubbling over there, and you have the whole story in Gittin of how Nebuzaradan tried to avenge it. So therefore, in other words, the Ruach HaKodesh is answering back to Yirmiyah, you want to know why things became so bad? Well, consider what they did in the first place to make things be so bad. Which Maharsha says, I mean, you have this klala in the Teuchacha in Parashas Kisavai. So why was Yirmiyah so shocked about it? But still, Yirmiyah is saying, I could understand, fine, the Torah says it's going to happen, but this particular case where she showed such care and such love for her son that even every little bit that he's gaining weight and growing, she's so grateful to Hashem that she's giving gold to the Beis Hamikdash for it. And then look what happened. And the Ruach HaKodesh is answering, yeah, but on the other hand, yes, she's giving gifts to the Beis Hamikdash. But on the other hand, consider how they desecrated the Beis Hamikdash by killing Zechariah over there. Anyway, the point of the question is that we see that the boy was named Doyeg. Now, who was the one Doyeg that we have in Tanakh, the famous enemy of David, who was a Rasha? The answer is Chozi Mai Solik Bey. Well, you see what happened to him. Exactly that. But you see, in other words, that he was killed. So you see, in other words, it's a bad simon. In fact, Rabbeinu Hananel says, when the Gemara said earlier, you don't use their names, meaning if a person is called by their names, he's never going to be successful in life. And you see over here that, in fact, look what happened to him. So you see, in fact, that Adarabah, it's not that you should use such names. Adarabah, you see, the fact that he was named with such a name contributed towards this terrible thing that happened to him. So this is the idea then that we don't name after Rishoyim. by the way, we should mention in this connection with this whole story of the killing of Zechariah, there is the famous story involving that it's brought that I think the Rebbe brought in a sicha regarding the Alter Rebbe. There are various other places where they tell it about various other tzaddikim that there were in his time. There was a dibuk. There was somebody who's got a foreign neshama has invaded him and is causing trouble. And the Alter Rebbe talks to it, and it turns out that this is the neshama of one of the people who had been involved in killing Zechariah, and over. He hadn't come back in a Gilgal, and he never had his tikkun yet. And then in the story, the Alter Rebbe is misaking him by pointing out that after all, they as much as it was a terrible thing for them to kill Zechariah, and was saying over here the consequences of it were horrific. On the other hand, there is a certain limud schus on them because if they were trying to prevent Zechariah from actually speaking out in words the nevuah that the Beis Hamikdash is going to be destroyed, because that'll make it more inevitable. So that's a slight limud schus on them. And with that, he was able to be misakin this poor neshama, and it was able to come to peace. They never mentioned this. You have the famous sicha about Miriam Bas Bilga in Tavshin Lamed Hay, and then there was a follow up sicha in Simchas Torah that year, where people are wondering, what is it, since where you Malamed Schus on Miriam Bas Bilga? The Gemara says she was an out and out Rishas, and the Rebbe says you have this example of the story from Sipurim Neroim, where you see the Alter Rebbe did the same kind of thing for this wandering the Shum over here. Okay, Yom Yom Mashiach Gola, Ches Kislev. We're waiting for, and we're waiting and hoping for every day for the Gola Amitis Vashlema. And there's a psak din in halacha in Hilchos Nezirus that if a person says I'm going to be a nazir and I'm not going to drink wine on the day that Mashiach comes, then the halacha is he's never allowed to drink wine. Now, what do you mean? You would say, in other words, why? Mashiach hasn't come yet. What's the problem? But no, because any moment Mashiach could come, today can be the day that Mashiach comes, and therefore his neder is going to be chal right away. So we see it's not just a nice thing that we say, that we hope Mashiach will come today. There's actually a psak din in halacha that depends on that point.
Yeah, that's why the
Kohanim
cannot get drunk.
So as far as the Kohanim drinking, that's another matter. The Gemara says in principle it should be that the Kohanim can't drink. In practice, though, they are, because we also, it's going to take time even once Mashiach comes. Mashiach can come right now, but it will take time after he comes for all the Kohanim to be determined which Mishmar they're in and which Mishmar is going to serve which week in the Beis Hamikdash. And only once that's set up do they have that during the week when they're serving in the Beis Hamikdash are they also to drink wine. The Gemara calls it takanose kalkalose. They're fixed up by the very fact that they're messed up. Because we're messed up and we don't know which Kohen is supposed to be serving when in the Beis Hamikdash, that itself fixes things up for them. That itself makes it that they're able to drink wine.
Maybe he has a sicha, you probably know him, after 3 weeks he can get straight again. Sleep it off, walk.
Right, so that's the Rebbe points that out in this connection. Had it not been for the fact that we need to know, the Gemara says over there, if a Kohen knows what Mishmo he's in, and he knows that this Mishmo is supposed to be on duty this week in the Beis Hamikdash, then he's not allowed to drink wine. Yeah, that's the sicha you're referring to. The Rebbe says, he could sleep it off, but the answer is Mashiach can come so quickly that there wouldn't even be time. Sleep it off, walk it off, or that's it, or wait it out. Or sleep it off, wait it, walk it off, or wait it out. Yeah. Okay. Continuing with halachas of Shabbos candle lighting. You have you're putting up the candles. So you want to put water into them beforehand, so that when it burns down to there, it should go out. You're not allowed to do that even before Shabbos. Where there's a need for it, now to never stresses it has to be tzurich gadol, a great need. Then you can be makel if you put it before Shabbos. Now, what about another case? You may have like a hanging chandelier or something where you have candles in it, and you want to put a keli with water underneath it so that any sparks that fall down will fall in the water and go out. That you're not even allowed to do before Shabbos. As far as put a keli just to catch the sparks without water in it, that you're allowed to do even after Shabbos begins. It's going to be muktzah. It's not, because the sparks have no mamashus, so therefore you're not putting anything muktzah into the keli. Had you put a keli over there, for example, to catch the overflow of oil, that would be something else, because then that would be muktzah. Then you can't put it there on Shabbos because it would be muktzah. Because in other words, as soon as the grease or the whatever, the oil starts falling in there, the keli is going to be also to move. So therefore it's called mevato kli mehechone. It's called that you're preventing a keli from being used on Shabbos. It's midrabbanan, and it's almost as if you cemented it in place for the rest of Shabbos. So therefore it's almost like bidden. You would be allowed to put it before Shabbos. if some oil does drip into it, then you can't use that oil on Shabbos, and the keli itself is also removed. If nothing drips into it, then just the fact that you put the keli there doesn't make it also. So in short, in other words, you have a bunch of different dinim over here. The bottom line is to put a keli to collect sparks that you can do, even on Shabbos. To put a keli to collect the dripping oil that you can only put before Shabbos, but not on Shabbos. If you put it there and something does drip into it, it becomes also to move. And to put water in so that the candle will go out and it reaches a certain point, that's also to do even before Shabbos. But in a case of Tzorach Gadol, you could do that.
The sparks,
are
talking about oil?
We're talking about Pasha, candle. It gives off sparks, and then you have the little sparks of wick or whatever that are going to fall and might start a fire. So you want to put something over there. Okay.